all the, up and down the line and all through New England, down to little holes in the wall, so-called museum. Also been called upon at times to help groups in the general area. And the museum operation becomes something of a problem. I might advise at this moment that Fred Van Dock advises me that he hopes to have the State Museum open in July. That's in the New Empire Plaza. They just sent me a stack of booklets on what they've been doing. Well, for a long time, I dreamed of something like this and had a lot of thoughts on what it should do and ought to do. A small museum like this is not going to compete with the ones in the area. And of course, there's a new concept on museums that's come into the picture, largely historic districts. And I've been trying to work with the state to get this little corner of the town labeled an historic district. I think you can find out all about that from your reading and material, which outlines what it's all about. In any case, I'm sorry I couldn't participate in the renovation and lovely job that's been done here, but I can only remember that my wife and I worked hard at the old foundry when it was just a shambles, hoping to start that on the way. And if any of you were over there last night, you can see what a tremendous job has grown out of that small beginning. I had thought that I might say, and this is too late and too little, and then it occurred to me that maybe it was never too late. And that was based on the fact that, well, 10 years ago, when we were trying to put together the bicentennial program and outline the three phases, that the heritage part of our bicentennial was ignored. And now we're up to USA Festival, so we have a little catching up to do. At this time, I don't think it's inappropriate to examine the role of the Historical Society and Museum in the community role. Well, I suppose you know that museums and historical societies come under that great organization headed by the Board of Regents. You're chartered by the Regents and given certain privileges and responsibilities. Also under the Regents, of course, the universities, colleges, schools, private and public, all the way down through training and trade schools and libraries. And of course, they do also have a great variety of licensing, professional and semi-professional licensing under their wing. But the educational setup is designed for learning. And in that connection, it's a give and take cooperative effort. Too often it becomes a matter of petty jealousies and different directions that cause conflict. And I do hope that there will be the cooperation from the schools, library, and museum, historical society, which will blend into an overall real birthday party leading up to Horizons. Now, Mr. Housekeeper mentioned about the volunteers. And one of the seminars I was, not too long ago, from the Jersey groups, which are doing tremendous work down in Jersey, how they had done things. And one of the, they reported that To get anywhere, you have to have the three C's. Commitment, cooperation, and communication. And it's a tough one to get those three all in one. You get people who profess commitment, but the enthusiasm fizzles out too quickly. Cooperation is the other one. Someone wants to be the boss and the other ones pull out and you don't have it. And communication is one of the sad things about the county, is to try and communicate from one area to another. I've tried for years to work things out with the radio and the press, and it's a sad situation the way it doesn't get to the public. But what this museum does need are those three C's. If you like this museum and want to see it grow and do something for the community, and you commit yourself, keep at it, and cooperate with your own group and others to see that we get somewhere. The lady who related this to me is in the audience, and I hope she'll forgive me for using this. But a while ago, I recommended this one of the television programs, and for some reason or other, they couldn't see it, but they suggested their daughter see it. And the daughter came back very enthusiastic and said it was most interesting and entertaining, and that she did not realize that there were two sides to the revolution. Nobody ever told me. And they didn't, because there are two sides to a lot of things. I suppose I was brought up that way. But there are, and we've ignored. But I am thankful to say that there are those with more of a voice than I am that have come forward with the other side of the revolution, what it was all about. And we won't know our present revolution unless we do know something about what's happened before, and we don't. I have one other little tidbit that arose out of this camp. The moral of that is that it works both ways. Here is a youngster who wants to know things and learn, but hasn't had it presented to her from sources you would hope would be able to do so. So it's a little two-way street. The other little tidbit is another youngster in town. Her mother or father aren't here, so I can tell this one. In any case, there's a 10-year-old. Now, somewhere or other, this youngster has been either doing some unauthorized homework or using her brain or listening, because this was social studies was asking the class about what was our heritage, going through and asking each of the youngsters what it was. Well, of course, there's a variety of very worthwhile answers. But this little tot, when it came to her, and she was asked, what is our heritage? And her monosyllabic answer was, taxes. Now, there's a bright youngster. Now, I don't think the teacher had a response for that one. And there it lies. Not as much to learn as much to do. I welcome anybody who wants to come and visit or talk. I try to maintain an image of being a very wise individual, but I'm not. I profess complete ignorance. There's too much to know. All I can say is that the key to my getting what information I do is professing ignorance. And then I can listen and soak up some of the things that I may have use for later. But I do wish you all success. And it's a wonder to see this beautiful layout and this nice, clean, crisp building. And all these little 200-year-old girls, they don't look that old, do they? All these little 200-year-olders running around in their caps and thing. I don't see any old decrepit gentlemen around here. We're all young, aren't we?
Absolutely.
You betcha. We're the boys. We were there and we fought that revolution. Yes, sir. So if you want to know about the Battle of Argonne Corners, join us. I thank you and I thank you for the privilege of having talked to you.
On this occasion, I couldn't say no because history has always been something that's been very close to me. Also, the fact that this may be a small museum in a small township, that made it even more interesting to me. And as I sat here now, I thought to myself of the famous Dartmouth College case in which the United States Supreme Court said, Dartmouth may be a small college, but there are those who love it. And it's obvious from the gallery here today that while this starts out and may for some time be a small museum physically, that there are many, many who love it. Now, I had the feeling after I thought about today that probably the background of this building would be covered by one of the speakers, but I find that it has been very, very well covered, except for one omission, the question of the date, by the Peekskill Star, which, if you haven't seen it, carries a very interesting announcement of the background of this place and how it came to be. Going back to history, I thought, well, look, let me find out something about history. And I took down my H.G. Wells, which is always a standby. I took down some of the volumes of the Historian's History of the World, and I also opened up some volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And as a result of it all, I was able to cover in a relatively short time, don't get scared of this, this is in a very short time, all 50 or 60,000 years of history, and I found it fascinating. If I was to go into details, I'm afraid you wouldn't get home in time for dinner or maybe for breakfast tomorrow. I refreshed my recollection with the fact that the first living things many, many thousands of years ago came into existence at that time. That the first birds and the appearance of furs and feathers also took place long, long ago. And then I guess maybe at 50,000 years ago, man appeared on the scene. And then from there, my notes go on to say, the world has existed for many, many thousands of years as far as we know it. First came naturally the cultivation of the land, and then something about the earliest ships and sailors, and the beginning of writing. And there I pause, because what is history after all? History is a record of what has happened. And for there to be a record, there must be writing. You can't just rely on memory. For somebody to communicate with somebody out of the jungle in the wilderness who is a couple of hundred miles away from him, unless he's able in some way to put it in writing and have a message relayed, there can't be no conveyance of that message. The beginning of writing was on stone and tree trunks and on skins, birch bark, and on the papyrus reed from which we now have the word paper. It's of interest too to note that the first making of pottery and of sculpture today even is recognized as a very special production of mankind and has not been very much improved on. Now, I could go on and on and on, but You didn't come here to just to get a lecture on history. As I looked around the ladies, I thought, well, I wonder what interests them. And I thought, well, being women, being ladies, they have to be interested in cooking. And I thought of the caveman and his family assembled out of the cold in that cave. They'd start a fire to keep themselves warm. And then all of a sudden, some of the growth of that time, vegetation and whatnot, came sliding into the fire. And after a while, they pulled it out, they tasted it, and they made a tremendous, tremendous discovery. The art of cooking. They discovered what a difference there was in eating something that was well cooked. That was the beginning of history, of that kind of history. Also, I thought of another kind, a sadder, sorrier kind of history, and that is man's need to impose his will, his wishes, upon his world. And I thought, how did it start? Well, obviously, it must have started with a rock. They had no weapons, they had no instruments. From the rock, a great discovery was made, perhaps 1,000 or 2,000 years thereafter, and that is that a rock used as a slingshot is much more effective. And then there were spears from trees, there were clubs, of course, and then after a while came that tremendous, tremendous discovery, and that was the bow and arrow. And at that point, the alarmists all thought this was the end of the world. But you see, we're here today, many thousands of years later. The world has not ended, although we are still living under a later discovery, which is one that can have very, very serious final effects. And so serious that the hope is that the seriousness of the effects will keep people from being tempted to use the atom bomb. Let's all pray that that will never happen. Now, turning now to the place of writing, this is where we really have to go back to. Historians have sometimes differed amongst themselves, not sometimes, but generally, as to which was more important: the discovery of writing, or the discovery of mechanism, machinery. And we can look back, if our eyesight is that good, and I'll admit that nobody will remind me of it, my eyesight is not as good as it used to be. But the feeling was definitely felt that writing was very, very important, was even more important than these discoveries, even though when you stop and think of the early man who had to do his plowing with sticks of wood and dig out the earth and go about it that way, and that today there are plows, real plows and other things, you realize what a tremendous advance we have made in history. Modern language contains many thousands of words, but the early languages could have consisted of only a very, very few words. The growth of speech has been a very slow process, and the ability to express ideas came late in human history, perhaps only 400 or 500 generations ago. Very early in the history of mankind, these needs became very important. One, to recall a particular future time, something that had to be done. Two, to communicate with some other person who was not present, nor easily accessible. Next, to assert rights over tools and cattle and so forth by distinctive marks, to distinguish what one has himself produced or herself produced, and which perhaps one wanted a barter or trade, such as a special form of pottery. The right to property must be established before it's able to barter or to sell it. I have here something about the American Indian. There was a time when I was very much interested in the Indians who preceded us here in Putnam Valley. However, referring to the invention of writing, which developed out of a historical, out of a pictorial record, human tradition was able to become fuller and much more exact. Verbal tradition, which had hitherto changed from age to age, became fixed. An increasing number of human beings began to share a common written knowledge and a common sense of the past and of the future. Human thinking became larger in operation, in which hundreds of different kinds of places in different ages could react upon one another. It became a process constantly more continuous and sustained. Also, for hundreds of generations, the full power of writing was not revealed to the world, because for a long time, the idea of multiplying writings by taking prints of a first copy did not become effective. What had to be done was, a copy of everything had to be slowly and painstakingly made, whereas now we think nothing of publishing a million or 5 million books, recordings, which are sent all over the world. As I may have indicated before, you're wondering, my God, why did he come here and talk us to death about history, about the cave people, that sort of thing? Well, it seems to me that this is the time and place to say a very few words in dealing with such a subject as history, civilization, and writing, one which goes back 40 to 50,000 years and covers a great deal of territory, and we are, after all, members and interested in historical society. I feel that this occasion and this place has special significance in that appropriately we meet to dedicate a historical building in what was previously a school. And we come to dedicate as a place of learning, as a place where many Putnam Valley young people first learned that most important of all civilized skills, the importance of reading and writing and arithmetic. And certainly, a historical institution like this takes its place alongside a school. I don't think the occasion should pass, too, without a special accolade to Fred Shaw, longtime historian of Putnam Valley, who for years has had the serious responsibility of collecting and safeguarding items of special Putnam Valley interest. It is my hope that Fred will, in cooperation with the Historical Society, make a complete record of the items which he has so painstakingly gathered, and then, in further cooperation with the Society, work out a satisfactory agreement for the safeguarding of these historical matters, so that the history of Putnam Valley can be available to all the people of Putnam Valley safely and readily. Fred, on this occasion we salute you. We thank you for having been a pioneer in this important work, a work of historical interest which you have so conscientiously carried out. And also, through some files, we came across the Putnam Valley Post, which was published 30 years ago. It was called the only non-official publication, which it was. At the time it was started, I advised the young people who started, I said, look, put an announcement on the first issue that you'll run it for a year, because by that time you'll be tired, but at least finish it for that. And then if you want to continue, you can. And looking through this copy of the Post, which is dated June 1948, in big letters it says, Fred F.W. Shaw suggests ideas for beautifying the valley. And then it goes on to tell an article about Fred's good work. And Fred, as a memento of this occasion, this is yours. Oh.